org. Welcome to Animal Airwaves Live here on WUFTFM, our weekly hour-long show devoted to the discussion of the health and welfare of animals. I'm Dana Hill. I'm so glad you've tuned into the program today, a new live show here on the 30th of November, 2018. And I'm really happy to welcome back to the program today from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine, Dr. Bobby Connor. And we're going to be talking today about something that may have affected your life if you are someone who has a dog, vomiting in dogs. We're going to find out the difference between vomiting and regurgitation and whether or not they mean things that could potentially be bad. So stay tuned. Animal Airwaves Live is coming up after this news from NPR. Welcome to Animal Airwaves Live here on WUFTFM, our weekly hour-long show devoted to the discussion of the health and welfare of animals. I'm Dana Hill. Really happy you've tuned in today on this Friday, the 30th, the last day of November 2018. Can't believe it's almost December, but I'm really happy to welcome back to the show today our friend Bobby Connor from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine. And we're going to be talking today about something that is probably something you have experienced if you have a dog, and that is vomiting. I mean, all animals kind of do it from time to time. We do as well, but it can be certainly unpleasant for everyone involved, and it could even be a sign of something that could be wrong. So it's always worth knowing what could be going on. So welcome back to the show, Dr. Khan. I'm really glad to have you here.
Glad to be back. Thanks.
You probably get a lot of phone calls, a lot of visits from folks whose dogs have vomiting as a symptom of a problem.
Absolutely. It's one of, if not the most common presentation we see on emergency. And that's largely because vomiting can be caused by so many different things, and you don't always know immediately why that is. So, and it can range in relatively minor things to more serious things. So it is something we pay attention to, but it's also so very common, and so it's just a starting point for us.
So, I mean, probably dozens of potential causes.
Yes, at least.
Wow. Okay. So when folks come in, the vomiting, you tell them, or you know, people might already have inferred this, that it's sort of a symptom of something else. Right?
Exactly.
Vomiting in and of itself isn't like a disease. It is kind of a demonstration of the body's rejection of something.
Exactly. That's typically what's going to be the main driver for vomiting, is your body has decided for some reason or another that it wants to expel whatever is in your stomach. And so you can imagine that that's advantageous in a lot of situations. If an animal in the wild, for example, or in your household were to eat something that it shouldn't, and the body recognizes through maybe some chemicals that are released from a plant material or some sort of chemical product, and your body says, no, that's no good, sends a signal to the brain, and the brain says, let's get rid of this the quickest way we can. And if it's still in the stomach, getting it out the front door is going to be the quickest way to do that. There are other times when the sort of toxin or whatever is making your body or your brain not happy is coming from within the body. So for example, if the kidneys stop working. The kidneys have two main jobs. One is water balance, and the other one is getting rid of waste in the body. And so if the kidneys can't get rid of that waste, the waste builds up. And so that waste is increasing and increasing in the blood, and then the brain gets unhappy because there's too much of this waste around here. And it will, again, it's not necessarily going to distinguish between we ingested something versus something is coming from within the body. And so the response may be the same in vomiting. So we do try to figure out, where is the source coming from? Is it coming specifically from the GI tract, or is it coming from somewhere outside the GI tract?
This is really fascinating. Okay, now I just want to preface the following question for our listeners and just say, hey, I know it's lunchtime, right? And I know that some of you are in your car or somewhere and you're eating, but we're going to talk right now about kind of functionally what is happening in the body to this, how this process works.
Yeah. So again, vomiting starts actually in the brain. So you have what's actually called the vomiting center.
That sounds terrible.
You have an entire their control center, right? And there's a number of different mechanisms that that can initiate that. And, you know, we have what's called a chemoreceptor trigger zone. And so there's some cells in the body that will, you know, receive signals that say, hey, that's bad. We want to get rid of this. And there's a lot of different ways to stimulate vomiting, which means there's a lot of different ways to prevent it, too. But that sends a signal to lots of different parts of the body because vomiting needs to be a coordinated effort. We're basically saying, hey, all that process that happens in this direction, we got to reverse that. And we got to reverse it quickly and in a coordinated manner. So we have to essentially squeeze the stomach to get everything out in the right direction. So sphincters are opening and closing in the opposite direction they normally would. Your abdominal muscles get involved to try to help push everything out of your stomach and back out the mouth. But we also need to make sure this is safe. And so we don't want any of that, you know, in stuff that you've ingested to come up through the esophagus, through the throat, and then leak back into the lungs. So we have to make sure that the glottis is closed at the time. All of this is actually very fascinating, very coordinated. The other things that happen is most people will remember, if you think about it, even if you don't want to, you feel nauseated before this vomiting happens. That's part of the process as well.
Is that a physical sensation? I mean, I know what it feels like, but is that coming from the brain?
Yeah. So that's a brain process. It's more than that, but yes, the feeling of nausea is coming from the brain. But also, you know, the things in the intestines and the stomach are kind of moving. Muscles, smooth muscles are contracting, and but you'll notice your mouth starts to fill with saliva. We want to kind of lubricate the process. We want everything out of here. And so you might recognize in your dog or your cat drooling. So drooling in some situations can be a sign of nausea, something that we pay attention to, especially if it is followed by vomiting. But as we know, every time you feel nauseated, you don't necessarily vomit. But that is part of the process. And then all of a sudden, it's ready. You're like, oh, I feel like I'm going to vomit. And then you do. And everything happens. Everything sort of squeezes at once to push everything very forcefully back out the mouth. And then, you know, usually, hopefully, you feel some relief after that. Most of the time, I think people, you know, they don't like vomiting. Vomiting is not a pleasant experience. But the relief you get afterwards is actually a little bit better. That nausea can subside, and you've gotten rid of, hopefully, whatever you were trying to get rid of. And so, you know, the knowing and understanding that process is actually really important for us diagnostically, because we want to recognize that, yes, what happened was actually vomiting, because we can confuse it with other things like regurgitation.
Let's make that distinction right now, because this is fascinating, and I had never even thought of the two as separate, but you tell me that they are separate.
Yeah, so vomiting and regurgitation, medically speaking, are not the same thing. Sometimes when we're chatting colloquially, we will use the terms interchangeably. But from a medical standpoint, vomiting, as I just described, is this very coordinated effort. You know about it in advance. You feel that nausea versus regurgitation is not originating via the brain from the stomach. That we're not expelling things from the stomach. We're expelling things from the esophagus. So that tube that goes from the back of our mouth to the stomach, that is essentially a tubular muscle that helps propel things from. So that way, if we're lying on our side or on our back or upside down, food will still get from the back of our mouth to our stomach. But that process can also happen in reverse. And that is a passive process. So that is what I like to explain to people. When you're standing talking to someone and all of a sudden you go, I just vomited in the back of my mouth. You didn't actually. You regurgitated. You didn't know it was coming. You had no warning. You didn't have time to run to the bathroom and you know, get yourself situated. That was regurgitation. And so we actually need to witness that in our patients in order to be able to tell the difference. Because whatever, if a pet spits something up, and you know, as we use that term, and you find the pile, which is never fun to find, but if you find that pile, you don't actually know if what your pet did was vomit or regurgitate. Finding, you know, stuff on the floor isn't necessarily going to be helpful in figuring out which this was.
Mm. And sometimes you get the sort of the taste like there's some stomach acid or something.
Yeah,
in there.
And some of the bile and stomach acid from the stomach can kind of leak back up into the esophagus, and so you will get that kind of acidic taste in your mouth, and that does happen. And so that's why sometimes the contents of what comes up isn't really even helpful for us. So if you come home from work and you find a bunch of piles of what you think is vomit around the house, you don't at that point actually know if your cat was vomiting or regurgitating. Now, if you see it, That's what, those are the questions I'm going to ask you. I'm going to say, tell me what you saw. Did you see that coordinated effort? Did you see the heaving? And if, you know, if you're really struggling to figure it out, sometimes I'll even try to mimic the sound. I'm not going to do it now, but the regurgitation, if you're in the other room, you're not going to hear regurgitation, but you will hear vomiting. You know when your cat's about to bring up a hairball. Everybody knows, who has a cat knows that sound. Oh, it's going to happen. And you know your cat has found the one square of carpet in your whole house if everything else is tile, and that's where she's going to vomit. You hear that coming, or you've been woken up in the middle of the night by your dog vomiting. Not so with regurgitation. So if you hear it or if you see it and you see that kind of abdominal component, regurgitation is when your dog was laying down, got up to go outside, and just bleep, something fell out of her mouth. That was probably regurgitation.
Okay. And so regurgitation, not really something to be alarmed about.
It can't. It's in most cases less alarming, but it does indicate that there's some sort of problem in the esophagus. And in some cases, that can actually be quite significant and potentially severe for a couple of reasons. Depending on what the underlying cause is, it could be a sign of a disease called megaesophagus. So as I said before, the esophagus is a muscular tube. And there is a syndrome where that esophagus can get sort of stretched out. A few different things can cause that. And when it gets stretched out, you get this big sort of floppy esophagus that stops working properly. And then you start to get regurgitation frequently. And you'll recall I said before, when we're vomiting, one of the important things that we do is we close our glottis so that when we are expelling all that stuff from our stomach, it doesn't accidentally slip down into our airways. It still can, but it reduces the chances of that quite significantly. But with regurgitation, that doesn't happen as well. And so there is a risk of developing aspiration pneumonia in animals that have a lot or of chronic regurgitation. And we do see this more often in dogs than cats. But it may be something as benign as or as you know, not as serious as something like megaesophagus, just what we call esophagitis or just inflammation or irritation, heartburn more or less. When you get heartburn, that's probably that your esophagus is in some discomfort. And one of the things that we can see is regurgitation. That isn't as worrisome for me. So for the other thing is if a client, you know, they've not witnessed what their pet is doing. We just find the piles. Some of the other things that can help me say, I'm suspicious that maybe what we're seeing is regurgitation and not vomiting is the pet still wants to eat. Because if you're feeling nauseated, the first thing you are going to do is stop eating. And so pets that are vomiting are also typically not eating. Not at all cases, but most of the time. Whereas with regurgitation, it's not accompanied by nausea and other signs. And so oftentimes pets will still eat despite occasionally bringing something up. And so that's for me a red flag. If I hear a pet is vomiting but also eating, I go, let's dig into this a little deeper because I'm suspicious that maybe that's not what's going on. So, you know, having some other signs along with it can sort of help us, you know, figure out what's more or less likely.
You're listening to Animal Airwaves Live here on WUFTFM, our weekly hour-long show devoted to the discussion of the health and welfare of animals. I'm Dana Hill. My guest is Dr. Bobby Connor. It's 19 minutes now after 1 o'clock. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Animal Airwaves Live here on WUFTFM, our weekly hour-long show devoted to the discussion of the health and welfare of animals. I'm Dana Hill. My guest today is our friend Dr. Bobby Connor from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine. We're talking about vomiting today, I know, but if you'd like to join the conversation, maybe you have had your pet experience this and you'd like some answers, we'd welcome your phone calls, 352-392-8989. Okay, so Dr. Connor, we now sort of understand the difference between, I think, vomiting and regurgitation, or at least we understand what regurgitation is. We understand how vomiting works, the process per se. But as we sort of alluded to earlier in the show, vomiting has, you know, innumerable potential causes. And in the case of a pet owner who has come home to find that there is some vomit lying about, there's really no good way to understand what it was exactly that was the problem if that's just you come home and you see that.
Yeah. So if you come home and find, you know, a pile of vomit, maybe one of the first things to do is, you know, find your animals. You know, if you have more than one, you won't even necessarily know who that came from. Oftentimes, you can sort it out based on who's not feeling good. Guess what? The animal who's vomiting probably isn't feeling good. We talked about drooling being a sign of nausea. If you see an animal who skips dinner or is, you know, just strings of drool coming out of his mouth, well, he's probably the culprit. Can you say that with 100% certainty? Of course not. But we're gonna play the odds and say, yeah, that's probably the one I'm worried about. You might come home, find a pile of vomit, and everybody seems fine. And that could be that this was, you know, we ate something that just didn't sit right with us. Maybe we were sniffing around the house and, you know, found, I don't know, my cat's kind of gross and likes to eat those little roaches, and then he brings them back up for us. So I don't panic about that because he's otherwise acting fine. Now, if I came home and I found, you know, a bunch of vomit and he was lethargic, he was just not himself, or again, didn't want to eat. He loves to eat. You also know your pet better than I do. Right. So if you have a pet who is definitely a chow hound and is skipping a meal, that's significant.
With the different causes of vomiting, they can probably range from relatively unworrisome to probably significantly troublesome.
Absolutely.
Right? And what would be some of the more benign reasons?
Like I said, because vomiting is one of the more common reasons that pets come into the emergency room, honestly, a lot of the times we don't get to what is the actual cause, and the level of sickness that pet has is going to determine sort of how aggressive we're gonna go investigating that. And you know, you had some leftover food in the fridge, and maybe you ate it a day or so past when you should have, and you might feel crummy for a couple of days.
Yeah.
You're going to get over that. You're probably going to feel fine in a day or so. You're going to maybe try to file that away, learn from it, and not do it again. But you're gonna get past that. Same kind of thing in our pets. A lot of the some acute causes, dog went outside and, you know, maybe ate the stool of another animal, which they do sometimes. And that might upset the system for a little while. If it's not getting better very quickly within a day or so, or if it's, again, accompanied by other signs and symptoms, lethargy, not wanting to eat, that could be a sign that there's more going on.
Let's go to the phones. We've got several callers waiting, and so let's try to take these. Holly in Ocala, welcome to Animal Airwaves Live. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Yes, I have two miniature poodles, and I have witnessed them kind of making a snorting, honking sound. And I was told by the vet that that's very common in poodles because of the collapse of the esophagus. One of them has trouble eating, and I have to break up treats very, very small, and he's very hesitant, and he will regurge. I'm assuming that's what that is. The treat, but does it cause any long-term damage when that happens?
Yeah. Okay. So that's a really good question. And that honking noise that you're hearing, I'm going to make an assumption here that what's happening is actually a collapse of the trachea. So poodles,
okay.
So the trachea is the tubular structure surrounded by cartilage that moves air from the back of the throat to the lungs, where the esophagus is the tube that runs right parallel to it for a good length and gets things from the mouth to the stomach. So I think what your dogs have is actually collapsing trachea or tracheal collapse.
Okay.
Yes. And now that could be, if that does extend to the cartilage in the very back of your dog's mouths, that could impact swallowing and why you sometimes maybe see some hacking or regurgitation. But that's something you're actually going to watch more closely on the progression of coughing and breathing issues, less on the regurgitation. If their trachea isn't, you know, doing all the things it's supposed to, it's possible that they're coughing up some, you know, kind of phlegm and mucus. And it can actually be really difficult to tell the difference between hacking from the trachea or from the esophagus. So it's something you definitely want to follow up with your regular vet and talk to him about that. But I think what's going on, just given what you said, your poodles and what you're describing, that sounds more like a trachea issue.
Okay.
Well, Holly, thank you so much for the phone call.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Let's go next to Sam in Gainesville. Sam, welcome to Animal Arrows Live. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. I appreciate you taking my call. Doctor, I have four mini dachshunds. They're sort of midi dachshunds. They weigh about 14 pounds each. And I have one of my males who's neutered, likes to eat the stool of the other dogs. And it shows no signs of regurgitation or vomiting from that. And I try to keep him from doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But it just amazes me that he keeps on doing it. I also have the dogs eating grass, and sometimes I get some regurgitation from eating the grass. And I figure that's they're somehow cleansing themselves if they're doing that. But I'm not sure. Could you expand on my question?
I will do my best. So the first where you have one dog who is eating the stools of the other dogs, and that is something we hear fairly commonly. And it's one of those things that's pretty gross, but it's not actually that big of a deal in most cases. And there's reason sort of evolutionarily why wild animals might do that. Kind of the first time of eating something, you might not get all of the nutrients from it. And you can imagine if you were a wolf and food was scarce, you know what? If all else fails, I'm going to try and digest a little bit, get a little more nutrients out of this the second time around. So while it's kind of gross, there is, in some situations, a potential advantage to that. Now, in modern society, you're presumably taking very good care of your dachshunds and feeding them regularly. So it's not something that your dachshund needs to do, but that's kind of a leftover instinct that, and unfortunately, nobody's quite figured out how to get rid of in all dogs. If you have any ideas, we're open to it. The other component of it, I'm forgetting what his other question was.
The other question was about eating grass.
Oh, eating the grass. That's right. So we don't 100% know why dogs do this, but there's some theories out there. And the one that makes the most sense to me is that, again, you're feeling your tummy's a little upset, you're not feeling great, and you want to either do something to settle your stomach or to actually try to induce vomiting. And I think that's really where that instinct has come around is, dogs are not cows. They will not digest this grass. This is not something they can do. So eating grass is not something that's ever going to have a nutritional value to it. But is that something that can cause just enough irritation in the stomach to induce vomiting? We do hear a lot of very commonly in dogs that present to us with vomiting as a complaint. A lot of pet owners did recognize the dog was eating grass and then he vomited it back up. And so one theory and the one that makes the most sense to me is that this is a behavior that has evolved in dogs as a way to say, I'm not feeling well. I wonder if I ate something that I shouldn't have. And if I can sort of induce vomiting in myself, this might be advantageous. In modern society, I as a veterinarian can induce vomiting much, much more effectively. So that is something that we can do and we use that. But I suspect that's what's going on in a lot of cases. You know, your dog probably has a little mild stomach upset and recognizes that and has a drive to try to eat grass to maybe help with that. That's my best guess.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
And thank you so much for calling in, Sam. I really appreciate you joining the program today. You are listening to Animal Airwaves Live. And our telephone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 352-392-8989. Now, when we sort of related to the eating the grass and the kind of irritation it causes, this is the time of year that many folks will have put up holiday decorations. Mm. And I know, at least from being a cat person for a long time, that, you know, kind of inexplicably the cat will ingest this stuff, even though shortly thereafter vomiting occurs. Is that simply a reaction to the kind of irritation that something like Christmas tree needles would cause in the stomach?
Very likely in a lot of these cases, depending on what exactly they're ingesting. There are a lot of plants that can be toxic in dogs and cats. And fortunately, a lot of them are mildly toxic. They mostly just cause gastric irritation and gastric upset. And so you might have your pet having some vomiting or just not wanting to eat for a day or so. There certainly are some plants that are more worrisome than that. But that is most likely what's going on, is there's just some irritation there. This is not really food that a carnivore would be eating. And so that's going to be the response. same thing, you know, if they're eating a bunch of wrapping paper or things like that. Now, you have to be extra careful with cats around the holidays with ribbon and things that you're using to wrap presents with, because that can be a big problem in kitty cats.
Like tinsel, that sort of thing.
Yeah, tinsel. Anything that could string-like has the potential to cause what we call a linear foreign body. And that's one of the things we worry about, is there is essentially – I think of it as like the drawstring on, some sweat, like your sweatshirt or sweatpants or something like that, where if you pull on one end and it's anchored on the other end, the sweats sort of bunch up. And that will happen in your cat's intestines, as well as your dog's intestines, if they swallow something that has length to it, a string or, again, wrapping paper, ribbon, curling ribbon. If it anchors itself somewhere in the intestines, then that becomes a big issue. So we are on sort of high alert around the holidays for those types of things. We've got young, curious animals that are getting themselves into some trouble. So some things to kind of keep in mind this time of year.
Yeah, okay. Dental floss would be another thing that animals should not probably be getting into. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the phones. Let's talk to Sherry in Alachua. Sherry, thanks for calling and joining the program today.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for taking my call. I heard you just a minute ago talking about tracheal collapse. And my question is, I've had vets refer to this as a reverse sneeze, which seems to me like it's some kind of a tracheal collapse. I've had several dogs that have done this, and I currently have one that does it quite often. And I do like a cricoid pressure, kind of a tracheal massage, and I get it to stop. But once it stops for a few seconds, he'll start up again, and this will go for like 3 or 4 times until, you know, finally I can get him to stop. And he just looks so concerned. Like he's not able to breathe, but it seems like the cricoid pressure ultimately gets it to stop. Is that the same as the tracheal collapse you were talking about before?
So those are actually different. The reverse sneezing and the tracheal collapse are essentially different locations. Can I ask you, what kind of dog do you have?
This one is, I guess he's some kind of a pit mix. He looks like pit hound. He looks like Petey from The Little Rascals.
Okay.
You know, long and lean.
Okay. So
the other ones that did it were like Dachshund Basset mixes. They're all rescues, so I have no idea what they are. But of the 5 dogs that I've had, 3 of the 5 have done this. And they all have that same concerned look on their face. And I'm like, I got you. And I do a little bit of that massage and get it to stop for them. But it worries me if I'm not home and they're doing it. How long is it going to go on, you know? And are they having trouble breathing?
Yeah, no. And reverse sneezing, I'll be honest, I've never really understood why we call it reverse sneezing. I think it's just because it sounds a little bit different than sneezing. It's got more of a snorting aspect to it. But reverse sneezing is a completely benign thing that dogs will do sometimes. And it can be difficult to know if you don't see it or hear it, what the difference is. And I often send people to the internet, which is a wonderful place for a lot of things. You have to be careful. But if you go onto something like YouTube, and you search for a video of a dog reverse sneezing, sometimes that can help. And if you say, is that what my dog is doing? I would not be concerned if your dog is truly reverse sneezing. But that is very different from a collapsed trachea. Or there's a lot of other respiratory conditions that can cause animals to make strange noises, whether they sound kind of like coughing or hacking. The other thing is that if you have a smartphone or some way that you can sort of quickly videotape this, if it happens, you know, 3 or 4 times in a row, if you can kind of, it's tough in those moments to think about it, but if you can, you know, grab your smartphone and hit a record a video, show that to your veterinarian, that is incredibly helpful for us to try to figure out, is this a true concerning breathing problem like a collapsing trachea or maybe a laryngeal problem, or is this a benign case of reverse sneezing? If it's reverse sneezing, I'm not worried about it. If it's something else, then there could be more going on that needs to be investigated.
All right, that's great. I'll check out the videos and see what I've got and take your advice. Thank you so
Perfect.
Much.
Thank you so much for joining the program, Sherry. I appreciate your phone call so much. Our telephone number here, 352-392-8989. I'm Dana Hill. My guest today from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine, we're talking about vomiting today, is Bobby O'Connor. And so, Bobby Connor, when we come back from a short break, let's take a short break right now, and not to throw Richard off here, but when we come back, I want to talk about some of the more serious things that vomiting might indicate, and we'll get to more phone calls as well. We'll be back with more Animal Airwaves right after this. Welcome back to Animal Airwaves Live here on WUFTFM. I'm Dana Hill, and today is the 30th of November. If you're listening to the program today, it's a live show, and we are happy to have back as a guest here from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine, Dr. Bobby Connor. And we're talking today about the rather unappetizing topic of vomiting, but it's something that clearly is resonating with some folks who have pets that have experienced this. And if you'd like to find out maybe what is vexing your pet, I hope you'll join the conversation. We're going to go back to the phones right now and talk to Caroline in Gainesville. Welcome to the program. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. So I have a Basset Hound. She's 7 years old, and every time she drinks water, she coughs and gags, and sometimes spits up clear mucus right after drinking water, every single time.
Okay. And does she tend to drink water really fast, or have you noticed anything like that? Or she just seems to, is this something that's come up more recently?
No, it's something she's almost always done.
She's almost
done. She doesn't drink very fast or anything like that. It's just something that she does, and I'm just kind of curious what it's all about.
Well, it sounds like it doesn't otherwise cause her any major issues, which is good news. I do wonder if she potentially has a little irritation or something going on in the back of her mouth, kind of in her larynx and pharynx area. So you've got some cartilages in the back of your mouth that open and close and help us to make sure that things go down the right tube. So we want to kind of close off our airway when we're swallowing, but we need that to be open when we're breathing, and so that can sometimes be an issue for some pets. So it's possible that there's a little irritation back there. If it's not causing major issues for her, then, you know, something to keep an eye on. But if you have concerns, I would definitely talk to your veterinarian and, you know, let them know about that. They can, you know, do a good exam on her. Sometimes to get in the back of the mouth, we do have to sedate them so that we can see, because it's really hard to, you know, tell a dog to say, you know, open your mouth, stick out your tongue and say, ah. They don't always tolerate that very well. So if it's something, certainly if it happens more frequently or you notice any changes, the big concern there would be, again, as we talked about, the respiratory system, that trachea and the esophagus are really close together. And so you'd want to watch her really closely for any changes in breathing that could be a sign that she's aspirated some of that water. But it sounds like for the most part, she's doing okay. And this might be a quirk of her. But I would encourage you to talk to your vet the next time you bring her in and make sure there's not something else going on.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I appreciate the information. Bye-bye.
Thank you for calling in and joining the show. I appreciate it so much. Let's go back to the phones. Let's talk to Phyllis in Gainesville. Phyllis, welcome to Animal Airwaves Live.
Hi. So our dog has been diagnosed with voluminous bile syndrome, and he's right next to me making a mess. But he also, every once in a while, like I'd say every 3 to 4 weeks, he'll also, I guess it's regurgitate. Like last night he regurgitated chicken. And I don't know if it's part of a bigger problem and there's a bigger picture and if they're related or not. He's on omeprazole, and we've been told to feed him a late dinner, which we do.
And so that seems to help with the kind of vomiting that you were finding in the mornings. Is that right?
I think it's helping. It's unclear because he'll still vomit, but I think that it is helping with the bile.
Okay.
I think that's lessened.
Okay. And so when he brings these things up, are you noticing what we talked about in the show earlier where, you know, he's just kind of standing there or laying there and then that stuff comes up? Or are you ever seeing any retching component, an abdominal component?
I'll see him. Usually he'll just, he you know, like, I guess retching. Well, you see his abdominals going, and you know he's going to go.
Okay.
And you just pick him up off the sofa or whatever. Last night it was on the sofa, which makes me think he didn't have enough time. We weren't there.
Gotcha.
Makes me think he didn't have enough time to run, because he doesn't do that unless he has to.
And it's also possible some animals obviously can have both vomiting and regurgitation. So it's possible that your dog is doing a little bit of both. And I would suspect if you're seeing these types of things that these might be part of the same underlying condition. And omeprazole is kind of like an acid-reducing medication that if your pet has some regurgitation caused by irritation to the esophagus because there's some of that gastric fluid leaking up, you know, kind of backwards into the esophagus, that can cause some irritation or like heartburn. And so that may help with that. But there might be some other things that that you would need to do to either help alleviate those symptoms or potentially, you know, work it up further to get dig a little deeper to figure out what is causing this. Because if it's happening frequently, there's an underlying reason for it. And, you know, we might be able to investigate that further. So something, it might be worth talking to your vet. It sounds like you've been working with them some. But if you're seeing, you know, more changes or more signs and they're not really resolving with the treatment you've started, it's probably worth, you know, following up with your veterinarian and say, hey, you know, these are the improvements. We're seeing some improvement, but we're not quite where we want to be. You know, what are the next steps there?
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for the call. I appreciate it so much. Let's go back to the phones. Let's talk to Jennifer now. Jennifer, welcome to Animal Airwaves Live.
Hi, thank you so much.
I'm glad to take your call.
Okay, fantastic. My issue is one of our dogs, both of them are adopted rescues, so we don't know all of their history up into this point. He's a small Chihuahua Terrier mix, and he's very loving, and he's attached to my sister very much. But when you want to, like, cuddle or sit with him or put your hand near him, he licks excessively. And we kind of don't know how to, like, stop the licking. You know, he licks a lot, and we don't know, like, what it is.
So there may be a few different reasons for that. One possibility is behavioral.
Okay.
Some dogs are lickers, and that might not be something that has a true medical underlying cause. However, okay. The fact that you said he's got some Chihuahua in him makes me think of a couple possibilities. What are his teeth like? Does he have really bad breath, and are his teeth particularly gross?
No, not necessarily, but it's interesting you mention that because after he eats, he'll smack his mouth, like he'll smack his lips
mm-hmm.
for a while after he eats.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, Chihuahuas can be, and I know he's not purebred, but they can be sort of notorious for having problems in the mouth and their teeth and their dentition that could potentially be leading to some of the licking or, you know, just not quite being able to swallow properly or maybe just some discomfort in the mouth. And okay. So it's probably, you know, again, if he's otherwise doing okay, it doesn't sound like it's urgent. But maybe the next time you go in to see your vet, you can just mention that to them and say maybe they can get a good look inside his mouth, make sure his teeth look good. There's nothing going on in there that would potentially cause the additional licking. But it's also very possible that this is just a behavior trait of your dog and,
okay.
you know, one of those things you might just have to learn to love about him.
Oh, yeah. We don't mind it. I just,
sure.
I don't, it feels compulsive.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We kind of get that feeling that it's compulsive and I don't know how to stop that.
And if it is, if there's not a true underlying medical reason, you honestly might not be able to stop it per se. And if it's not something that's bothering you and he otherwise seems okay, there may not mm-hmm. be anything to do. If it is something that becomes excessive and you think is impacting his life, even if it is a behavioral thing, there might be some things that you can try, you know, some behavioral modification things you might be able to try, or in some cases, even medications to try to help with the, you know, whether it's an anxiety related issue. But the first thing I would want to do is get a good look in his mouth and make sure there wasn't a true medical reason for him to be doing it.
Okay. Thank you so much for your help.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call, Jennifer. Really appreciate you joining the program. So, Dr. Connor, when we think about some of the more serious problems that could cause vomiting, maybe even like chronic kind of vomiting, mm-hmm. If that's something that animals experience, what would those be?
So I would kind of break them into two broad categories, and those would be the primary GI causes or gastrointestinal causes of vomiting versus the extra GI or something outside of the intestinal tract. And the most concerning primary GI issues or immediately life-threatening things are going to be things like foreign bodies causing an obstruction. Those often require surgical removal and emergency surgery. And so think about those in animals where the vomiting started started suddenly. They're usually going to be typically in younger animals, although older animals are certainly naughty as well, where, you know, a dog that is known to chew on and swallow toys or get into the garbage or things like that. And we're going to want to work that patient up to look for those signs. In other patients, especially if it's been more chronic vomiting, like you were saying, I'm going to start worrying about things like organ failure, particularly kidney and liver dysfunction that can lead to vomiting. Because, again, those are two organs whose job is to help filter the blood and get rid of the things, help get rid of stuff in the body that we don't want. And if they're not doing their job, all of that stuff builds up. So even though the problem isn't specifically in the intestines or in the stomach, the body's going to respond similarly. And so those would be things that we would want to look for. And so commonly, if you have a pet who's been vomiting either very severely and or acutely, or it's been going on for a while, most of the time blood work is going to be one of the first things we do. And that's the reason, is we're looking for evidence of organ dysfunction, specifically kidneys and liver being some of the top two things we think about. Now, it doesn't mean it's not fixable, but those can be very serious and life-threatening in some situations.
So when folks bring their pets in to a veterinary clinic and you say that vomiting is one of the leading complaints, mm-hmm. what are kind of the top sort of causes that the dog ends up having that really kind of require attention?
So for the ones that require attention, so in the pet who is vomited a couple of times and is otherwise pretty normal, feeling pretty good, and my physical exam is otherwise pretty boring, I'm probably never going to figure it out. We're just not going to know. And if it gets better and goes away, we're going to be okay with that. The ones that are sick and either uncomfortable in their belly or are generally, I can tell, not feeling well, maybe they're running a bit of a fever, those are the ones that I'm going to be more concerned about. And kidney damage is definitely a top one that we see. And that can happen sort of slowly and insidiously in our older patients. Or it can happen after an infection or an intoxication in some of our younger patients. So we certainly see a lot of that. But because vomiting can be caused by so very many things, we have to look really hard. Another diagnosis that we make commonly is for a disease called pancreatitis. And that is something – the pancreas is an organ that has a lot of different functions. It helps with secreting molecules to help with digestion. And if the pancreas gets angry, those molecules, those enzymes can leak out around the pancreas rather than going in their nice safe packaging to the intestines. And that can cause essentially digestion of tissues you're not supposed to be digesting. And that can be really painful and cause vomiting and nausea and those types of signs. So that would be another relatively common thing that we diagnose in pets that have vomiting without a specific, you know, this organ's not functioning or this was the specific cause of that. And that is something that we see pretty frequently. It's tricky to diagnose, but we do see that one a lot.
And do remedies exist for a lot of these circumstances?
The good news is yes. If we can figure out what the specific cause of the vomiting is, then, you know, a lot of the cases there can be. But as I said before, a lot of the times we don't figure out what the cause of vomiting is. We might be suspicious. Well, my dog got into the garbage a couple of days ago. He seemed okay, and now he's vomiting. Well, that could be either because he's got some pancreatitis or, again, that could just be an upset to his system. So sometimes what we do is symptomatic and supportive care. And we'll often do the symptomatic and supportive care, even if we make a diagnosis. So even if we find that your pet has kidney damage, for example, well, we also, you know, while we're treating that or trying to figure out, you know, the underlying cause, we're going to try to make him feel better. So we're going to give him anti-nausea, anti-vomiting medications. If he's not eating and drinking and he's losing extra fluid, he can become dehydrated. And so we might need to give him fluids to kind of stave off the dehydration. So depending on what's going on, there's certainly going to be some things that we can at least do to make your pet feel better while we're trying to figure out what the cause is. Or in some cases we go, well, chances are we're not going to figure out what the cause is. And so we're just going to try to make him feel better. Or anyhow.
Should someone be alarmed if the vomit appears to be bloody?
I would say I'm always careful. I don't want people to panic. But that is going to be generally a little bit more concerning than if there's not blood in it. But that doesn't mean if there's not blood, it's not a big deal. I'm still going to be considering all the things I was considering before, is how is the pet otherwise acting? But if I see blood, which can fool you, blood can look like blood and be bright red. But because it's in the intestines, your body might start to digest that blood. And so the other thing to look for if your pet is vomiting and you see what looks kind of like coffee grounds, kind of a dark brown to black little granules, that actually could be a sign of digested blood in the vomit. So something to be aware of. And those would be things that would say, you know what, I'm gonna make a call to my vet a little bit sooner than if it was just a pile of regular vomit that happened once. Even if my pet's otherwise feeling okay, it's probably worth looking into that sooner rather than later.
What are some scenarios in which you, as you alluded to earlier, might induce vomiting in a clinical setting?
Yeah. So if we know a pet has ingested something it wasn't supposed to, one of the most important examples of that is you come home and you find that your dog was chewing on the sago palm that you have in your yard. That is a very, very toxic plant in Florida. And that would be something where we would induce vomiting as soon as possible. And we might even kind of, quote unquote, pump his stomach, do what we call gastric lavage to get all of that plant out because it's so incredibly toxic. Or it could be I came home and I've seen things like this happen. I was going to change the batteries in the remote control for the TV. I dropped the batteries and my dog somehow snatched them up immediately and swallowed them. Well, the batteries could cause some issues later. So we might try to induce vomiting to see if we can get the dog to bring those back up so that we don't have to go back in manually and to retrieve them. So sometimes if we know a dog has ingested something and we're in a window where it's still in the stomach, we can try to induce vomiting for that. So there's a few indications. You came home and the dog ate, you know, all of your holiday chocolates. Well, we know a lot of chocolate isn't good either. We might be able to induce vomiting before it causes problems.
This is going to sound like a horrifying prospect, but do you ever ask someone to collect any of the vomit to bring to you?
Often not. There might be some situations where that's helpful, though. And most of the time, clients think of that themselves. They say, hey, we brought this up. If it were, for example, I saw my dog, he vomited up some plant material. And I want to know if that's something that should be worrisome. Yeah, bring that in. Because if to me, that looks like it could be part of a sago palm or something, I'm going to treat that very, very differently than if, you know, it looks like just some leaves in the garden. So there are times when that might be helpful. So you can either bring that in or take pictures of it. There is limited possibility to analyze that vomit. It's not quite like on CSI where they just, you know, run a test and every known possible molecule is tested for. But if you have some suspicion and can narrow down what you think it would be, we can sometimes analyze that.
Well, Dr. Bobby Conner from the UF College of Veterinary Medicine, thank you so much for coming back and talking to me. I'm really glad to have you here.
Yeah, it was a pleasure to be here.
I want to thank everybody for calling in today and for listening to the program. Thanks to Richard Drake for directing the program today. I want to invite you all to join me again next time for another episode of Animal Airwaves Live. Bye-bye.